Hello, little kid. Do you want a little chocolate or something?
Yes, but I don't want any tricks. I know this whole train to Hogwarts is full of surprises and magic, so I just want a regular chocolate.
Oh, you don't? You just want a regular chocolate?
Yes.
Then here, take this one.
Why are you snickering?
No, just take it.
Okay.
Open it now while I'm here.
Okay. Oh my, a snake?
I hope you're not allergic to poisonous snakes.
Of course I am. It's biting my arm.
Oh no.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Help, get help.
Oh, no, I can't be here. Trolley, chocolates, drink beverages, birdie bots, beans. Oh no. Oh my god.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh, your host. This is the show where we analyze a movie with a scientist and a comedian. And today's show is no different. We're talking about Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, a movie many people have asked for. It's from 2001. I have never seen any Harry Potters. I've never read any of the books. This was totally new for me. It was a blind spot in my societal experience. And so I'm so happy to be filling it in with two lovely people that are going to be helping me. And I want to warn you both, do not give me spoilers for the other 29 movies, because now I'm going to watch them. This will be a lot of entertainment for me during the quarantine. But let me introduce you first. First of all, we have writer, comedian, and host of the comedy podcast Cool Ladies with Palmira Munoz, and co-producer of Jenny Yang's bi-monthly show called Comedy Crossing, the Animal Crossing stand-up show. It's Marie Soledad.
Hey.
How's it going, Marie?
I'm very good. It's actually Cool Aunties, not Cool Ladies.
Where did I get that from?
I might have written Cool Ladies on accident.
Let's just go ahead and blame you.
Yeah, please do.
No, I'm sure it's my fault 1,000% of the time. Marie, you may recognize she was on our Inside Out show from however long ago. And, you know, we're good friends. We're pals. And I heard that you were a huge Harry Potter fan. Is that true?
Oh my gosh, 1,000%. I was a huge Harry Potter dork. I dressed up for her like as a Gryffindor person, Gryffindor student for years for Halloween. I went to like every movie premiere, read all the books as they came out. It was like a whole thing.
Wow. Yeah. You were on the cutting edge. You were on the ground floor.
Yeah.
That's very exciting. I probably would have been freaking out also. I don't know why I just overlooked it all of these years. I guess because since I missed the beginning, after, you know, 3-4 movies came out, I'm like, okay, well, now I'm just buried. Now I'm too far behind.
Yeah. When the first movie came out, I was 6. So like Scholastic Book Fair was popping, mm-hmm. and I just had to get in on it.
Yeah. Well, so, I'm glad that you did. I'm glad that we have you as a specialist. And speaking of specialists, we are also joined by a developmental biologist and author of Lab Math, a handbook of measurements, calculations, and other quantitative skills for use at the bench, and co-author of Ahead of the Curve, Hidden Breakthroughs in the Biosciences, Dr. Danny Spencer Adams.
Hello, how do you do?
I do very well. I loved our pre-chat about Harry Potter, and I can't wait to get into all of this. However, you stopped me in my tracks just before we recorded and said that you had a big day today. Will you tell the people what you were telling us?
I did, but I want to issue a very strong caveat that this is very, very new data.
Great.
But today I now have a company and we're developing a new kind of cancer diagnostic test that's very fast, and it's based on looking at living cells and specifically at the voltage of living cells. It's been known for decades that when a cell becomes a cancer cell, its voltage changes. And in the last couple of decades, they have invented these dyes, and all you have to do is pour them on cells and they glow. And if the cell is cancer, it glows brighter. So we're developing this test that's based on comparing the brightness of the cells. And today was the first time I was able to work with skin cancer cells, skin cells and skin cancer cells. And I think it worked. And that's where the caveat comes in.
Yes.
I have a lot of stuff to do, but yeah, I think it worked. I'm pretty excited.
The first step in a series of potentially very exciting steps, right? I mean, these science trial and error takes a while, right?
Yes. Okay. But today was a remarkably good first try. It usually doesn't work that well on the first time.
So let's just summarize and say that you, Danny, Spencer Adams, have cured cancer today. Congratulations. Thank you so much for doing that. We owe you a huge debt of gratitude.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Also, I wanted to ask, you had some sort of involvement with Discovery's Curiosity series. Is that correct? You like made some sort of video for them?
When I was a professor at Tufts University, I had, I was using these dyes that you can film them and look at how the voltage is changing in the cells. And I was studying frog embryos, and I was just soaking them in the dye and doing time-lapse imaging of them. And if you play little microscope tricks, you use lookup tables to color things fancy, you can find really amazing patterns of how the voltage changes. And heavens, what's that fellow's name? He was a Mythbuster. He was the short Mythbuster.
Oh, no.
Yeah, anyway, he came across that video of an egg actually dividing, and he asked if he could put it on his episode about regeneration, talking about how you can use electricity to trigger regeneration of something.
Cool. Okay.
So that was really cool. I'm very excited about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, today we are talking about Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Yeah. And I think before we get into it, we have to mention this J.K. Rowling transgender manifesto.
Let's talk about it, Ethan.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't want to spend the hour getting political. It's a science show, and we're going to get into the science and have fun. But how do we not at least comment on this? I mean, I'll give Marie the floor. I'm sure, Marie, you have thoughts on this. But I have a quote from Daniel Radcliffe, which I thought was really good. Did you see his response to this?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. I'll just read it. He said, "Transgender women are women. Any statement to the contrary erases the identity and dignity of transgender people and goes against all advice given by professional healthcare associates or associations who have far more expertise on this subject matter than either Joe," which is, I guess, J.K. Rowling's real name, "or I. According to the Trevor Project, 78% of transgender and non-binary youth reported being the subject of discrimination due to their gender identity. It's clear that we need to do more to support transgender and non-binary people, not invalidate their identities, and not cause them further harm."
Wow. Go Daniel.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, it was really awesome to hear Harry Potter like vouch for trans people. to be honest, I recently came out as non-binary on like social media. It was an accident, actually. I just said I was non-binary like in a post, and then I got all of these messages like, "Oh my gosh, you're so brave. Thank you so much for sharing your journey." And I was like, okay, thank you. I guess I am very brave and strong, and this is my journey or whatever. But yeah, J.K. Rowling being a TERF is not great. And for those of you who don't know TERF, that's trans exclusionary radical feminist, or sometimes reactionary feminist. So she thinks she thinks she's down for the cause, but she has like a huge blind spot.
Yes.
You know, watching Harry Potter, I'm like, you know, we have Professor McGonagall changing into a cat. We have literal magic all over the friggin' place. Mm-hmm. But you don't think that trans people are real? You know what I mean? Like, she'll say magic, but it's like, oh, trans people, that's too far-fetched. You have JK, like, you know, a lot.
Yeah, I was pretty astonished by it. It was kind of one of those things where when it first came up, I was like, no way, like that can't be right. Something got misconstrued. And then I went and just started reading the stuff that she was like tweeting out. And I was just like, it just gets worse and worse the more she's just digging a hole. It was so bad.
Oh, dear.
But anyways, I think it's good that we at least call her out and say like, this movie is great. I'm hoping. What I've heard is that the following movies are even better. So that got me really excited because I did enjoy this movie. But what were you said you were six, Marie, when you first saw this?
Yeah.
So
went to the theater, went with my best friend. We were both Harry Potter nerds. It was dope. I got really scared at the scary parts because I was a child.
So wait, did you, sorry to stop you, but did you become a nerd after watching the movie, or you had already read the books, because I think the book, or like two or three of the books, came out like a few years before the movie.
I started reading the books because the movie was going to come out.
Oh,
and
smart.
I was like, I gotta read this before the movie comes out. And then, you know, very quickly read all of the books. Yep. It was like a whole event. And Scholastic was really pushing it on children.
Mm-hmm.
really giving it to them for their marketing. But yeah, I was hooked. And then I was a Harry Potter nerd. Not for life, but, you know, every time there is a new Harry Potter house quiz, I do take it. So maybe it is for life.
Yeah, that's not going away. I mean, it's cemented, right? I mean, now it's just, it was part of your growing up, your adolescence. So it's like where mm-hmm. you can't get rid of that. That's really hard. And Danny,
what houses are we? Just real quick.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't take the quiz. I mean, I would hope that I'd be Gryffindor. And honestly, I don't know really anything about the other houses. I know that Slytherin is bad, but besides that, the movie didn't really talk about the other two houses.
That's true. That's very book part. Do you want me to mm-hmm. tell you about the houses?
You can tell me. I'm down for all information that has to do with Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, I guess I should say, if I'm referring to the book, but not the other films or the, because I'm sure there's like a million spoilers that I could just walk right into and then I'd be, I don't know, maybe making it worse for myself later.
I'll keep it spoiler free. In the book, they explain the houses in like a weird poem that they took out of the movie, unfortunately.
Oh.
But yeah, Gryffindor's real brave. Ravenclaw is all the smarty nerds.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah, I love Ravenclaw.
Wait, why isn't Hermione in Ravenclaw?
Yeah,
she's braver than she is smart. Duh.
Okay, I'm sorry. She made it pretty specific at the end where she's like, "I'm just a brainiac. I just know books. You're brave. I'm not." I think that's a quote.
Again, no spoilers. But
okay. I'm sure she's super brave.
Ravenclaws are very smart. Slytherin, they're supposed to be, you know, cunning and very, like, competitive.
Okay.
And I guess that means evil to J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, geez.
And then Hufflepuff are just, like, lovable dorks.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so I am honestly a Ravenclaw Hufflepuff cusp. Every time I take a test, either I get Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff. And
non-binary.
Or non-binary.
Yeah, exactly.
So I get to be in between.
That's great.
Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff, yeah.
Wow. Okay, and Danny, when did you first see this movie, and did you see the other films? Are you a Potter person?
I am not a Potter person. I had seen the Philosopher's Stone before, or I guess the movie is Sorcerer's Stone.
Yes.
I had seen it once before, but I haven't read any of the books.
Okay.
So I am with you, Ethan. This is new.
Are you going to be like me, taking advantage of some of this quarantine time and just going so deep into this Harry Potter world?
I may dip my toe in, yeah.
Okay.
We'll see.
I may bother you for another podcast.
Okay.
So to break the ice here before we get into too much, I wanted to talk about the owls because I personally love owls, one of my favorite animals, I think. And I was reading about it and it said that 80% of the owls that we see were actually real owls. They would like shoot a bunch of takes of owls flying around delivering the mail or whatever and then combine them in post. And there was a few CG owls. But anyways, I had a little very quick little owl quiz that I thought we could take. I was thinking we could call it quizzage.
Oh, God.
And of course, as always with my puns, I apologize.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So, you know, anybody can answer these as quickly as you want. I just have three quick questions that are owl related. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay.
What is a group of owls called?
A wisdom?
No, that would be good.
A tribe.
The answer is a parliament.
Oh, fancy. Oh. Okay.
Pretty cool. A parliament of owls? Never heard that before.
That's very governmental.
Okay. And supposedly it came from C.S. Lewis's description of a meeting of owls in the Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh,
wow.
So
is that from James Lipton's book?
I do not know.
What's it called? An Exaltation of Larks.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. So,
I'd love to say we'll fact check that, but I don't know if we will.
Yeah. I don't know how many of them he collected and how many he made up.
Oh.
But it's a very fun book.
Okay, interesting. There was another book you wanted to shout out, I recall, from our pre-show discussion called Sleights of Mind. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. That book, everybody should read that book.
It's like a neurological take on magic, or something like that?
Yeah, it's two neurologists or neuroscientists got very interested in what magic could, you know, sleight of hand or the kind of magic in a magic show, what it could tell us about what our brains can and can't do. How is it that the magicians are able to fool us, and what characteristics of the way we see things and the way we interpret what we see, what characteristics are being exploited by magicians? So they went out and learned magic from all these brilliant magicians, and the book is fantastic.
Sleight of mind, if you're interested in that book. Sleight of mind. Yes. Yeah. Okay, second owl question. How many degrees can an owl turn their head?
180.
180, right? Yeah.
270 is the answer.
Whoa.
270. Oh,
wow.
Almost all wow. the way. And apparently, a blood pooling system collects blood to power their brains and eyes when their neck cuts off their circulation.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Did not.
That's like the reason that giraffes don't faint when they have their heads all the way down and then they lift their heads all the way up.
Mm-hmm.
The reason they don't faint is because there are like fibrous tissue in their necks that's like support hose.
Whoa.
It doesn't let the blood rush to their feet after they've drunk and lifted their head back up. It's just,
wow.
It's this beautiful mechanical solution to this physiological problem.
Man, whoever that mechanic was, it's pretty smart.
Very smart.
Yeah.
Smart. I'm definitely not that smart.
If you were strictly a Ravenclaw, you'd probably be able to figure that out.
Okay. All right. You know what? It is the Hufflepuff that is, you know, making me lose this quiz.
Okay. Last one. Owls are zygodactyl. What does that mean?
Zygo.
Like zygote? Like,
all I can tell you is zygodactyl.
So dactyl's fingers or claws, I guess. Zygo is when you've joined. So when an egg and a sperm actually join, it becomes a zygote. So something about having two different kinds of claws?
Yeah, extraordinarily close, yes. Their feet have two forward-facing toes and two backward-facing toes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they can grab things.
That's right.
That's why you can't escape their clutches if they get you.
No, and I'm not going to go into how owls catch stuff and eat it, but it is brutal. I'm telling you, you do not want to be the victim of an owl. They go hard.
Oh, boy.
I mean, that's parliament for you. Am I right?
Thank you guys so much for joining me. okay, so that game is over. I just wanted to add in one little, everybody wins, by the way. One quick owl fun fact. Owls are very intelligent and very sociable. And in Japan, you can hang out with them at owl cafes.
That's so cool.
That's great.
Yeah, so if you're there.
I knew about cat cafes.
Yeah.
Which I would highly recommend, by the way. That is where I met one of my cats, Swanson. So if you have the chance to go to a cat cafe, definitely do that. It's amazing.
Can you buy an owl from the owl cafe?
Ooh, great question. I don't know. I would love to. A little baby owl. So cute.
Right?
And they are really adorable, the little ones.
Yeah. Some of them are really small, by the way. They get to like literally 6 inches. Like that's their maximum height.
What do they eat?
Shrimp po' boys.
Yeah, okay.
No,
okay.
I'm not sure. Okay, so there's a couple things here. I was making a ton of ridiculous notes at this movie because there's so much magic and fantastical elements here. But there were a few things that, Danny, you wanted to touch on. One of them, which I did not write down, but you were talking about what it would take to use a broomstick to fly, to take flight. Is that right?
Yes. A long time ago when I was in graduate school, my graduate advisor was studying insect flight. And so I knew a little bit about how flying works. And so I thought, well, maybe you actually could fly on a broomstick. And what I discovered was that you can, sort of. You can't ride it like a horse. So you couldn't do it the way they do in the movie.
Okay.
And if it was going to hold you up, it would be way too big for sweeping. But if you took it and made it horizontal and spun it around its axis.
Okay.
So as if your broom is the center cardboard from your paper towel roll and you've yanked. So you're spinning your broom.
Oh, okay.
Okay. If you put a spinning cylinder like that into a flow, into, you know, air, wind or something, that generates lift in exactly the same way that an airplane wing does.
Whoa.
And they are actually building these real, it's called the Magnus effect.
Okay.
And I'm not supposed to, I don't know, what do you think, Marie? Can I, is that too much of a spoiler? There is a Magnus.
Whoa.
In later. Hell?
I don't remember Magnus.
There's a centaur named Magnus coming up. It's just a little.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what he does. I have no idea what he does.
There was a centaur figure in this movie too. I don't know if he had a name or not.
Ferenz. But in his name is Ferenz.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
His name's Ferenz.
It's Ferenz. Yeah.
Okay. I don't.
It's the Italian version of Florence.
Okay, so he was an Italian.
Centaur. Yeah.
Centaurini.
Centauro. Anyway, so this business of spinning a cylinder around its long axis in a flow of air generates lift.
Wow.
And they're making, so Jacques Cousteau actually had a boat that had these spinning cylinders instead of sails.
Wow.
And it would pull forward. The problem with that when they first started was the energy you use to spin the cylinder is way more than the energy you save by not powering a regular old motor.
So it's for looks. It's for aesthetic.
It was a little, yeah, it was an interesting experiment. But they are making little radio-powered airplanes that kind of work like this. So they're, you couldn't ride it, obviously, because you'd just be going, spinning round and round in circles, which I think happens in the movie, doesn't it? He like starts rolling over like he was rolling a kayak.
Oh, that's right. When he's like under the spell. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you could put your spinning cylinder into kind of a container and then hang from below it,
you
could use a broomstick as you could fly on your broomstick. These little radio powered airplanes that they're using, they're called the fan wing. Is the way to look it up if you want to Google it.
Sure.
And they work. So yeah, you could fly on a broomstick.
Wow. That's fascinating. I did not think that would be possible.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, pretty cool. Okay. Speaking of flying, you were also mentioning that the snitch and the flying key have something in common with mosquitoes.
Yeah. I thought it'd be fun to look up. I was thinking about flying broomsticks, so I thought, well, I wonder if the keys could fly or the snitch could actually fly. Mm-hmm. And that's actually much easier. There's a funny history to it that for a long time, there was this, you know, this sort of thing that everybody, quote, knew, which was that bees should not be able to fly. That if you look at them from an aerodynamic point of view, they simply can't fly, which, of course, is ridiculous because they can fly.
Yeah, they totally fly.
They totally fly. But it's only like in the last couple of years. And there was a similar question about mosquitoes because their wings are really, really small. And so they didn't understand how these tiny little wings could generate enough lift to lift the animal. So bees and mosquitoes are both, they're in the same group. These are flying insects that are grouped by having only one pair of wings. And the way it turns out they do it, the mosquitoes can fly with these tiny little wings because they beat 4 times faster than any other insect.
Damn.
So they are whipping those things back and forth. It's just really fast. But the other really cool thing about it is if you think about a bird flying, that's probably not a great, but if you think about something where that it's just raising its wings up and down. So as it goes down, it's generating lift, but it's got this recovery stroke that's kind of useless.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what the bees and the mosquitoes do is they rotate their wings perpendicular to the way the bird has the wings. So instead of being parallel to the ground, they're just upright kind of. And then they just kind of swoop them forward and then swoop them backward. So they angle them to generate lift going forward, and then they switch the angle so they generate lift going backwards.
It's almost like a swimming stroke type move.
Yeah. It's kind of like a swimming stroke. If you could do a butterfly, but you didn't have to take your arms out of the water.
Right.
If bringing your arms back to the front also moved you forward. So it's this really cool combination of being able to generate lift going both directions and flapping really, really fast. It's something like 60 flaps per second.
I had a stupid question about the keys also.
Yeah.
This is more, maybe Marie, you can help me with this, and maybe it's in the book. I was a little lost for a second because At the time, they thought that Snape, is that his name?
Yes.
Snape was ahead of them. They're like kind of chasing him into the, I don't know what to call it, dungeon secret area.
Yeah, secret dungeon area is the name of the
There's book. No way that that's true.
I don't know what the actual name is because Chamber of Secrets is the next book.
Okay. So. Yeah, some sort of the mirror room, right? Mirror of Erised. So the key, does it just regenerate? Because wouldn't he have got the key and then used the key and then had the key? Because they went and got another key.
Yeah, I think he was trying to rush in, so he left the key in the hole, and then the key was able to wriggle out and escape that way. Because his wing was all messed up, right? Because he was grabbed and jammed into the hole because it's a villain. They're not going to delicately, you know.
It's like a coke addict.
Yeah, exactly. I got to get that stone. I got to get my fix of that stone.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Asked and answered. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
I wanted to ask just a fun question here about the invisibility cloak. And first of all, I do want to mention that I tried to look up legit invisibility cloaks, and there are companies making them, such as Hyperstealth. They use some sort of light bending technology. It is pretty legit. They're like thin. It looks like glass or plastic or something, but it's thin and it can bend, and you go behind it and you cannot see what's there. And I believe they're using it for military purposes. Of course, no one is surprised. But if you guys were granted an invisibility cloak, what would be the first thing that you would use it for?
I would be a creep for sure.
Yeah. You would look at people that, like, the people that are like your friends that are hanging out without you that you think might be talking shit. It's like, let me go check that out.
Yeah. No, I would literally, that's exactly what I would do, Ethan. I would use the invisibility cloak to look at their phones, see their group message without me, find out where they were going without me, and then go into the trunk of whoever's car they were taking without me, and then just appear there and be like, oh, hey, guys, I didn't know you were going to be here without me.
Yeah, so weird. I'm wearing that shirt you all hate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. My brain, of course, I went to immediately steal. What can I steal? Which I guess is similar to Harry Potter because he went into the restricted area first thing, which I guess is not that restricted, by the way, because he just like opened a latch. But okay, that's fine. And also had a freaking huge lantern not in the cloak. So pretty easy to see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, I would probably just try to, I don't know, go into, of course, someone who deserves it, some sort of super conservative Republican person who takes money from the NRA or something, jack their stuff.
You know, maybe I wouldn't be a creep. Maybe I would just move things around slightly in people's rooms.
Oh, that's fun. Make them think like paranoid, make them think there's ghosts and stuff.
Yeah. You know what? I'll do that. I don't want to be petty. I don't want to ruin my friendships. I just want to make people think they're a little crazy.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. Danny, would you steal your peers' research?
I would not, but I'm definitely Ravenclaw. All I could think of is, wouldn't it be cool to be like in the aquarium at night? I would use it to hide and wander around the aquarium at night, or a natural history museum, or I think it'd be amazing to be able to just have a whole thing like that to myself.
Yeah.
That's a way better answer.
That's a fantastic answer. That's so good. Okay. Wow. Great. I'm so glad I asked that. I was debating it. Multi-headed animals like Fluffy, I believe his name was, or their name. I don't know. I guess it's multiple animals. I'm not sure. But they called it Fluffy, right? The three-headed humongous dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah.
Fluffy based on Cerberus, mm-hmm. who guards the gates of hell.
Right. Yes. Which I also found very funny, but just from like, there were certain things, of course, I'm watching it like a jerk taking notes. I'm sure if I was just watching it, I would have loved it. But I did think it was funny how their answer to how to protect something is the same as like a non-magical person's, right? It's like, just get a huge dog and that way nobody will want to mess with it. Like, magic aside, doesn't matter. When people see this dog, they're going to be afraid. They're going to want to leave. Yeah, same.
And he's a three-headed Rottweiler, right? Like, three-headed giant Rottweiler.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Scary dog.
Super scary.
People love to use them to intimidate.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask biologically if there are multi-headed animals and what's that about?
Yes, there are. They do occur naturally. A lot of people think they're hoaxes because it's very easy to hoax with photography. But there are actually animals, snakes and things, kittens. It's not as rare as you might think. There's actually a two-headed snake in one of the little zoo things in San Francisco. And that's probably the result of an episode where, had it finished, they would have been twins. So if you have an egg and it separates into two complete separate, well, a zygote actually, and it separates into two complete zygotes, they can both develop normally. That's twins. But if it doesn't separate all the way, you can get something with two heads. The other way to get it is to have two in there that then fuse. So it's not that weird. Three-headed, and actually, I just learned this in 2018, the very first wild two-headed snake was found. It happens in captivity, and because it's in captivity, they can be kept alive. In the wild, they can't. They can't really eat very well, and apparently the two heads will fight. They'll make it impossible for the other one to do things. But the story I know, which is so great, is, have you ever heard of flatworms, planaria?
Yes, but remind
me. They are exactly what they sound like. They're these little flat, wormy things. And if you've ever seen one, they're really cute. They have these little googly eyes. And a place that you might have seen them is, it's a really cool biology class lab trick, because they are fantastic at regenerating. So like in third grade, you can get a planaria, cut it in half, and come back a week later and you have two complete planaria.
That sounds really cruel, though.
Interestingly, it's actually it's one of the ways they reproduce.
They cut themselves in half?
They cut themselves, they pull themselves in half.
Oh my God.
It's really wild. They anchor the tail end and the head just crawls away until it necks down and then pops apart, like pulling silly putty or something. It's pretty wild. They don't love it. I'll tell you that. They don't love it. But
yeah, but doesn't sound like it.
It turns out, so you can actually chop a planarian up into a lot of pieces. They're very small. And you can chop one of those up into about 100 and something pieces, and each one of them will make a new worm.
Oh my God.
So it's really amazing. But the way you make it's the way you make two and three and four and five headed planaria is you play a little trick on the cells. So normally if you have your planarian worm, you cut its head off and you cut its tail off. And normally what happens is, and then you keep the piece in the middle. They'll all three regenerate, but we're interested in the piece from the middle. The end that had a head will regenerate a head, and the end that had a tail will regenerate a tail. That's normal. But if you cut the head off and the tail off, and then you dunk it into octanol, which is just an 8-carbon alcohol, it's a gasoline additive. Anyway, if you put it into octanol, that actually prevents the cells from talking to each other in a particular way. For the nerds out there, it blocks gap junctions. And that prevents the cells at the two ends from communicating about which end they are, from keeping track. I'm the head end, you're the tail end. So you prevent that conversation from happening. And in about 25% of cases, it regenerates as an animal with two heads.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool.
Again, cool and cruel.
And cruel.
It sounds like.
Well, what's so funny?
That is. Well, you're just promoting ways to mess with these worms.
Yes, we are. It's true. What's so funny about them, though, is if you feed them, both ends can eat, and eventually, and they have trouble. They both try to swim away from each other. They'll just go back and forth. They're push me pull yous, and they don't know which way to go. Eventually, the quote smart ones shape themselves into a U. So both the heads are facing the same direction and they move around like that.
That's adorable. That is adorable. That's like they are buddies going around doing their thing together.
Yep, and four little googly eyes.
It's oh my god. Okay, that was creepy though. I don't like that.
Yeah, this whole thing sounds like a weird, like you sound like the villain in a fantasy movie.
No, this is very serious science. Very serious.
Okay. I have to take your word for it. You're a scientist. I'm not.
Is googly eye a scientific term?
Can't be.
If you wanted, you could call them the eye spots. That's about as technical.
No. Let's go back to googly eye. Googly eye. Googly eye.
Yeah. No, they're pictures of those all over the web. We this was back when I was at Tufts. One of the other scientists there, Dr. Morcuba, was involved in sending some planaria up in the space shuttle. To figure out if
for further cruelty
to see if they could regenerate zero gravity.
I'm sure that all of those flatworms signed up to be part of this program, Ethan.
Sure
they trained very long and this is their lifelong dream.
Yeah, they're all ex-athletes. They all used to be professional tennis players and stuff, and now they're like, you know what, I'm still in shape, cut my head off.
Yeah, I'll just make a new one.
Yeah, I'll make a new one and then I'll eat twice as much. It's gonna be dope.
Yeah. Imagine if you could split off into two Ethans. Wouldn't you want to do that?
No, that would be terrifying. Absolutely not. Nobody wants that.
I mean, I would love... No, maybe I wouldn't love to be two Maries. No, okay. I wouldn't love to be two Maries that are shaped in a U and have to go, like, crawl into
one. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
like...
That sounds horrible.
If you want to make another Ethan and send him to Japan, like, maybe I would be down, I guess. But if he's attached to my body, I want no part of it.
Two separate Maries. One evil, one good.
That's getting interesting.
Right? Yeah.
There was movies about that, isn't there? Something about evil twin gynecologists.
Oh.
The good gynecologist and the evil twin gynecologist. I'm not
What movie
up.
Is that?
I promise I'm not making it up. It was it was like Jeremy Irons. Not Jeremy Irons, but somebody like that. A man with dark hair.
I hope it's like really obvious who the evil gynecologist is so I could just like turn around and be like, my mistake. I meant to make an appointment with your brother.
Well, his eyes are red, of course, and glowing.
Oh, good, good, good. Okay.
Yeah. That helps. Yeah, that's helpful. So yeah, if you guys are seeing a gyno and his eyes are glowing red, that's a sign.
To get his brother.
Definitely.
Yeah, ask for his brother. Okay, so we're running low on time, but I have a few questions.
Can I tell you one more story about the two-headed worms?
Oh, absolutely, please. I love these worms.
These worms, I will leave it to you to go to the web to find out how to make 3, 4, and 5-headed worms. There's some pretty amazing pictures of them. But what's really incredible about these two-headed worms is it's one animal, right? And you made it the first place by preventing the cells from talking to each other. Well, if you now take that two-headed worm, and cut the two heads off. You don't have to, you don't put it back in the alcohol or anything. You just cut its two heads off.
Okay.
It should now regenerate a head and a tail, right? Because that's what it, quote, knows. That's the shape it knows how to be. That's the shape that's genetically determined. And you're not mucking with the cells anymore. You're just making them have that conversation again as normal.
Okay.
They don't. They make two heads again. And every time you cut off those two heads, two heads regenerate.
Oh, like a hydra. Is that what that is?
It's kind of like a hydra, yeah. Hydras are also master regenerators. But this is just, what's so weird is that by briefly mucking with that electrical conversation the cells have that lets it know it has a head end and a tail end, just by changing that very briefly, you can completely change the anatomy of the worm.
Wow.
I mean, not Darwin.
It's permanently, like the communication is permanently severed, or now it's just under the
It opens back up again, but somehow blocking it briefly, you can show that as soon as you wash away the alcohol, after a little while, everything opens up and is back to normal.
Wow.
But it has reset its shape. It's forgotten the shape it's supposed to be genetically. And it's taken on this
new form
because you've mucked with its electrical signals. That's that is so cool. That is just
that's
an amazing thing.
That's wild.
Okay, so the plants, this is also, I believe,
the
part of that whole
snare,
sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah, they like fall into these plants. Hermione's yelling to relax. And then once you relax, they let go of you and everything's cool. So are there plants like that?
I don't know about the relaxing part. I know that's true of quicksand, that you're just supposed to relax in quicksand.
Okay,
mostly because it's not very deep. And if you just sink to the bottom, you'll just, you know, you'll be up to your knees. But the thing about that I thought was really cool about the devil's snare is that there are fungi that capture little tiny worms that way. They have little sprouts that are like lassos. And when a worm crawls through the lasso just tightens down and catches the worm.
Whoa.
And again, if you, they're, it's got a big name. They're called nematophagous fungi. So nematodes are the little worms and phagous means eating. Nematophagous fungi. And that's what they do. They lasso worms exactly the same way that devil's snare kind of lassos the three kids, the wizards.
Okay.
So that's interesting. That's super cool.
Okay. I wanted to ask about essentially the stone, sorcerer's stone or philosopher's stone gives you this like immortality type ability. It also turns lead into gold. Mm. I think those were the two main powers that it has.
Corey, you're the expert on that.
Yeah, that's what it does.
Okay. So I was trying to look up immortal animals and a lot more stuff came up than I thought it would. Uh-huh. Apparently there's the most like popular, which is the jellyfish Turritopsis dorni that hang out in oceans around the world and they can essentially turn back time by reverting to an earlier stage of their life cycle. Is that accurate?
That's cool. I have never heard it, but I completely believe it.
Okay. Yeah. Apparently that's the case. I don't know the details on that.
If we can go back to the nematodes the planaria for a second. They're immortal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of all the little two-headed ones that are just can never die. Oh my gosh. All of these things that you've done to these worms will never die.
Yeah, they're well cared for.
Boy, I hope so. It doesn't sound like it. I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you. Hard to believe you.
Not much is known about sexual reproduction of the planaria. They don't do it very much in captivity. So they can lay eggs and sperm and where you combine two and make a new individual. But I was saying before, usually they just tear themselves in half. So
right.
You do that once and those two new planaria are clones. They're identical. They're the same animal, identical genetically. And those then split into four and eight and whatever. And so if a planarian is alive today, it's the result of, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of maybe millions of divisions all the way back to the very first nematode.
We need to treat them with respect. They know so much more than we have ever known. Wow, there's probably been planaria at the, you know, Library of Alexandria.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. They're easy to find.
Probably built it.
They're easy to find.
We need to find J.K. Rowling, get her magic, because apparently she has it, and then into the minds of these planaria.
That's what's happening. I need to mention Michael Levin, who runs the lab where we did all this stuff. But that's the idea, is we're trying to figure out how they do it to see if we can do it.
Did you say that guy's name was Michael Levin?
Michael Levin is Dr. Michael Levin runs the lab where Dr. Murakumo works, and I was part of the same center when I was at Tufts.
I thought for a second his last name was 11, and I just wanted to confirm.
He's the 11th Mike. He is a planaria as a person.
Right, and always has been.
Yeah.
All mics stem from one Mike.
And this is Mike 11, yeah.
But you were saying one of the reasons I'm so willing to believe you about the jellyfish is back to planaria. They really are cool little beasts. If you starve them, they just get smaller.
Oh,
and then you
God.
Feed them again and they get bigger. And then you starve them again, they get smaller. And they can they stay the same shape. So they a little planaria, you could zoom in and it would look just like a big planaria. So
do you know if they enjoy their lives?
Great question.
No.
No, okay, they don't.
And you can take that as I don't know or no, they don't.
Got you. Okay.
But their brains are really simple. Really, really simple.
That makes me think they do enjoy their lives.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, really. Ignorance is bliss.
Exactly. I'm going to weigh in and use all my expertise to tell you that, you know what? They love their lives.
You know what? I'm not going to lie. I would love it if I just didn't eat and then I became tiny and then I did eat and then I became big. That sounds fun.
Yeah. Okay, I have to ask about an enzyme. While I was reading about all this biological immortality stuff, an enzyme kept coming up called telomerase.
Yep.
Yeah, can you tell me about that, maybe?
I certainly can. So that has to do with when an animal cell divides, or when a it's bacteria don't do this, and I don't think that single-celled organisms do this, because, as I was just saying, if you reproduce by just dividing yourself in half, you never age. But when you get into something complicated like a human or an animal or a big plant, we have our, you've probably seen pictures of genes or chromosomes, and they look like little X's usually.
Yeah.
So each of our chromosomes is one long molecule of DNA. So it has two ends. And the problem is, because of the sort of geography, that's an odd word, but because of what happens when a strand of DNA is being copied, because of the mechanics of that process, every time a cell divides, the ends get a little shorter. You lose some of the DNA at those two far ends of that molecule. And it's believed that that's part of the aging process, that the ends of your chromosomes getting shorter and shorter and shorter every time your cell divides is part of what makes the cells actually get older in a way that bacteria don't. They just keep dividing and grow and divide and grow and divide and grow and divide. They have circular DNA, so they don't have this problem of how do you deal with the ends. Anyway, so telomerase repairs those missing ends. It adds DNA back onto the end.
Wow.
So if your DNA is not getting shorter, you're not aging. The cell is not aging. So in animals that can regenerate, I'm not sure if they've looked in the planaria yet, but I'm sure it's there. What they find is they just have this really efficient, really good telomerase. So when a cell divides, the DNA gets shorter, and then the telomerase comes along and puts the DNA back. It adds it more, adds more back. So it's a really, really interesting molecule that seems to confer a certain kind of immortality.
So you're saying if I eat the planaria, I will become immortal.
You could try. The problem with eating things, although I didn't realize how much I love planaria. When we eat something, we just dissolve it in the acid in our stomach. But you can actually do genetics on planaria by feeding them RNA.
Oh.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wait, but if they live forever, does that mean if I ate them, I would just have them in my stomach forever?
No, you would dissolve it.
Okay,
you
cool.
would dissolve it.
Okay, so we can kill them. There are ways to kill these animals.
Oh, yeah, you can stomp on
Marie,
them.
I'm with you here. I think we should round up all of these immortal jellyfish. There's apparently lobsters and these, like, tardigrades. I mean, we should just make...
tardigrades are great.
We should make a little protein shake, if you will.
That's what I'm
I mean, first of all, we should make a company and we should sell this and tell people they're going to live forever. But also, we should make our own experiments and drink this stuff. And I mean, how can it hurt?
Yeah, we should actually live forever, Ethan, and then just sell snake oil to everybody else.
Oh, great idea. Yeah. Yes. If people meet our criteria, we give them the real deal.
Exactly.
Because I want a discount.
Tardigrade juice. Yeah, yeah. No, you're going to get a discount. You spark this whole thing.
Okay.
You're going to get the first batch of tardigrade juice.
Oh, excellent. Tardigrades are pretty hilarious.
You're our head scientist. Ethan and I are just, you know, razzle-dazzle marketing.
I need some razzle-dazzle marketers to charm the surgeons.
Yeah, Danny, you're handling manufacturing, R&D. Literally on our business cards, it just says razzle and dazzle.
Oh, perfect.
Can I be Razzle?
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll also legally change our names so that I am Razzle and you are Dazzle.
No, I'm Razzle, you're Dazzle.
Okay, great. I love Dazzle. That actually sounds like a cool, it almost sounds like a cartoon character for like the WB.
Yeah.
It does.
Well, Dazzler, isn't it Dazzler, the X-Man?
Oh, I don't know. I've never heard that.
I think she shoots light out of her hands.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I was thinking more of like the Tasmanian Devil or something like, I'm Dazzle. What's up?
Oh, yeah. Now we also have to change our voices to reflect these new characters. Okay, this is great.
Oh, of course. I'm Dazzle and I want you to try tardigrade juice.
Who could resist
Yeah, that's convincing. Okay, we are out of time, but of course I want to give both of you a chance to let us know if there's something going on. Obviously, your podcast, which I want to get the name right now, is Cool Aunties. Is that correct, Marie?
Yeah.
Okay, Cool Aunties, the bi-monthly show. Is that still, because I don't play Animal Crossing, my girlfriend plays and I watch from time to time. Is that where you just tune in on Animal Crossing, or do people watch like online while they play Animal Crossing?
You watch on Zoom and all of the comedians go to an Animal Crossing island and are Animal Crossing characters. And you can play Animal Crossing while you're there, but you're not on the island or at the comedy club.
So you can just play separately
on
your own.
You just have to play separately while you watch us be funny.
Got it. Okay, cool.
But it's free. It's a free show. Link in my bio on all my social media at Depressed Auntie. So please come through.
Excellent. At Depressed Auntie for all things Marie. Always a pleasure to have you. Dr. Danny, beside the solution for cancer, is there something you'd like to tell people about?
You know, I've been so focused on trying to learn about marketing. I wish I'd come to you sooner, but I haven't thought about anything else. The only thing that pops to mind is, and this is going to give my age away a little bit, which is fine. I actually have a trust for my nieces and nephews, and the name of it is the Wacky Aunt Trust.
Okay.
And my lawyer was like, really? You really want to call it that? So I definitely have to listen to this podcast.
Wow. Okay, that's fantastic. Well, I hope people, if they want to know about math, they can get your book, Lab Math.
Yeah, that would be great. Right? Yeah, buy Lab Math.
Go buy Lab Math and support Dr. Adams. And I thank you very much for being on the program and talking Harry Potter with me. And hopefully we can have both of you back to talk about, what's the next one? Chamber of Secrets, you said?
Oh, I would be absolutely
Chamber
delighted.
Chamber of Secrets. Yes, that one's my favorite.
Really? Favorite book or movie?
I think it's favorite book and movie. Because I like the snake. Surprise.
Okay.
The what?
Well, now I'm hooked.
There's a snake.
Oh.
There's a snake in this one, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that a reoccurring thing? Is there a snake in every movie?
Is there? But do you want spoilers? Do you want the spoilers, Ethan, or not?
No, you're right. I don't. I want to be surprised and delighted by every snake hiss.
Exactly. So, won't spoil it.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you both. Talk to you soon. Much appreciated coming on the program.
Thank you.
Bye, thank you.
Bad Science is a Seeker podcast produced by Emily Feld and me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our editor is Lucas Bollinger, and our social media is managed by Blue Whale Media. Shout out to EJ and Kate.
And the executive producer is Brett Kushner.
Oh, follow us on Instagram at BadSciencePod. If there's a movie you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, feel free to email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. And please leave us an iTunes review. Give us 5 stars. I sound like an Uber driver. But it does help. It makes sure people know about the podcast, which we really appreciate. Thanks for listening. Bye.